Blog Talk Radio.
Sports City, I do not know how to kick this show off. I really don't, man. I mean, the grill is at an all-time high. Flames burning, man. I can just smell the light fluid, man. We got food all around this mug. We got that food for thought, though. Hopefully y'all can do these dishes. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped inside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. Sports City. Welcome to the cookout.
What a thought, I'd be caught in this life. Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down, we gon' make this bitch light up. Even when the sun goes down, I'ma make it go.
Ow, hoes turning heads like owls. I'm the man of the owl. Triple entendre, don't even ask me how. Con Edison Florence connected to a high power. Y'all can miss me with the money talk. The smart money's on hold, fuck what the dummies talk. I don't do too much blogging. I just run the town, I don't do too much jogging. The summer's off, the winter too. Top down in the winter, that's what winners do. And to these niggas, I'm like Windows 7. You let them tell it, they swear that they invented you. Since no good deed go unpunished, I'm not as cool with niggas as I once was. I once was cool as the funds was, but these bright lights turned me to a monster. Sorry, mama, I promise you wouldn't kill me, but I would've went insane had I remained the same me. Fuck me, bitch is true. All I got is this money, this to do.
Okay, the calling number is 917-889-9592 Sports City. You already know how this goes down, right? So it's the cookout. Anybody that calls in, y'all got a dish, anything y'all want to throw on the flames here in the kitchen, y'all do so. We'll talk about this dice and stuff and put this plate out. You already know this food for thought that we put out. We cook. Everybody's stealing the slogan. They want to cook. We the original done daughters of that. But before I go any further, let me set this show off right. You know what I'm saying? Before I go there, let me get my people in here. First and foremost, calling out of Indiana, Delaware's own RTZ, a.k.a. Mr. King. Welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
A.k.a. R got the keys to the building, and I'm in the house. Let's do it.
And Sports City, you know what I'm saying? All right, so Sports City, I'm going to let y'all in on a little personal, right? But this is my big brother, and I'm happy. You know what I'm saying? So he hit me up. He like, yo, Ty, I got something to send you. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, what you got to send me, man? What you got to send me? Like I felt like the Snaggletooth dude in the beginning of Harlem Nights. Like, what you got to tell me? What you got to tell me? He sends me a picture. I said, oh, really? Not my baby. Like, my baby? So he was around my baby Tamika Catchings. I'm feeling some type of way because he know I'm a diehard Tennessee fan. So he was like, who is that? He's trying to question me. Like, I don't put dishes together in this damn kitchen. Okay, so I'm going to let y'all in on a little more personal, right? Like, okay. So y'all know, like I said, I'm a die for women's basketball. I'm a diehard Tennessee fan. You know what I'm saying? So I threw a question. I was like, you probably don't even remember Nicki McRae. He said, boy, stop. Like, so I think it was like he tried to hit me in the gut like Della Reese did Eddie Murphy. You know what I'm saying? Something like that. So I felt some type of way. You know what I'm saying? So he threw to me, gave me like, yeah, I'm around the time. I got it. I'm like, whoa. Like, he hit me. So I'm feeling some type of way getting him back in the kitchen. Now, as I said, I'm a diehard Tennessee fan. In Tennessee, I'm not talking about the Titans. I'm not talking about hockey. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about college basketball, and that's for the women's situation. But
Yeah. The lady volunteers.
Of course. Like, shout out to Pat Summit. Pat, I wish you could get your thought process back, because if she could get her thought process back, I wouldn't be on the fence that I am on right now, because I am – like, thoroughly on the fence of becoming a UConn Husky fan. Like, I really feel like that is about to happen. Like if Pat can't get her brain back, I'm all set, man. And there's no bouncing back from all timers. I think I might join the Geno Auriemma crew. But that's neither here nor there. I'm not even going here nor there. But like I said, I want to talk college basketball. And I don't even know how to paint this picture. I really don't know how to paint this picture. But it seems like every game that comes down to the end nowadays is called the shot. It's just purple period. I can't look at it no different. Like, and I'm laughing now because it ain't me. You know what I'm saying? But like a month and a half ago, it was me watching the Thunder take on Golden State and 3 seconds left on the clock. Steph gets the ball, cross half court, just pulled up at half court. I'm looking like, man, listen, not to end the game like this. He bangs his shot. I'm like, okay, hurt. Like it's me. People that know me personally know I'm not the best at losing. Listen, if we playing marbles, if we playing Street Fighter, if we playing run and gun, if we playing cards, whatever, I'm not trying to lose, man. I'm not trying to lose. So now, you got people, team playing, talking about, oh, win, lose, or draw, we're going to be in the kitchen. I'm like, okay, you know, do what you got to do. Come to the kitchen. People don't even come to the kitchen and eat. You know what I'm saying? Look, I tried. I swear. Before the show, I tried. I really try to text people. I send them emails, you know, whatever I need to do. Inbox them. They don't want to holler at me. So I feel like they caught up in their feelings. But like I say, I have to be here. You know what I'm saying? People choose to be here when they want to. So I guess when the air is clear. See, Arkeez, you already know. Like when the air is clear, it's safe for them to come to the kitchen. Now to be turn around and talk about the Rockets or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's neither here nor there, right? But like I said, situation that I look at is called the shot, right? So storm of this game, North Carolina has a decent grasp of the game. I don't want to say a stronghold, but they have a grasp on this game. People are getting in foul trouble, a lot of questionable calls, as was mentioned by the color commentators, which I don't even call him a commentator. I call him a former player, and Brendan Haywood, and the other guy he was with, I know his first name was Wes, if I'm not mistaken. And all of a sudden, Villanova storms their way back in the game, gets a strong lead in the game. They go up by 10, if I'm not mistaken. North Carolina storms their way back down, I think, 4. Got this lead to, facing a 3-point deficit, and Marcus Paige throws up the freakiest 3-point shot I've seen. Listen, the freakiest 3-point shot I've seen. Right. Since, and I hate to do this to myself. Since Ray Allen versus Georgetown in the Big East Championship, where he looked left and right in the air and just threw the shot up and hit it. And I'm like, wow. You know, and Iverson running down court and trying to hit the shot to send that joint into overtime, and he missed it. I'm like, I know how it feels. So Marcus hit that shot. I'm like, okay. Now, 4.7 seconds left. Of course they can get a shot off. Jay Wright calls a timeout, draws up a play. Now, I don't even know if people actually seen the replay of the sideline while Chris Jenkins throws this 3-ball up. As soon as Chris Jenkins catches the ball, Jay Wright looks at him and says, bang, when he releases it. When he releases the ball, Jay Wright knew it was good. Listen, Jay Wright had already turned toward Roy Williams to go walk and shake his hand because he knew the game was over. He hits the 3, and the rest is pandemonium. I'm not going to lie, Sports City.
We call that a swagger dagger, Todd. We call that a swagger dagger.
Right. Now, I'm not going to lie. To my brothers here that come to the kitchen, come help me cook up, I'm the puppy here. But I've been on this earth for 35 years. You feel me? Like I don't feel like I've been here for 40, 50, 45. Like, no, I haven't. But to me, that was the best national championship game I have ever seen. Every time you go there, there's a team that loses by less 7, maybe 11, close to 9. They're in that ballpark, keeping it close, but end up losing it by a 3-possession game, so on and so forth. We haven't really seen a nail-biter national championship since the Butler-Duke game where Gordon Hayward shot the 3 from half court and barely missed it. Like, he almost hit that one to end Duke's whole, situational aura in the game. Now, watching Marcus Paige hit the 3, the shot that he took, I was like, there's no way that he's hitting that, but he needed to hit the 3. They needed to take some shot for a 3-point to tie the game up. He knocked it down. I'm like, can that momentum have switched in North Carolina's favor, and all Villanova had to do was get that ball across court and get a heave up. And he basically shot that with so much confidence. It wasn't funny. He followed through. He looked at that thing, and just to see the stunned situation of people that are on the North Carolina side, and, you know, everybody's picking with Michael Jordan and the Hall of Fame speech meeting with him crying before he goes into the hall, so on and so forth. But it's all there, and like, I'm caught up in the pickle. Like I grew up in both sports. You know, well, I played all the sports growing up, but, like, king to me was football or basketball, and I'm caught. Like, which sport is heavier to me? It just, looking at basketball in the aura, I take it from, it was like, I think 2002 or 2003, the NBA had a commercial out, I love this game, and Danny DeVito was hosting it. He said, the best theater is basketball, because you don't know what's going to happen next. But you don't know what's going to happen in any sport, but with a well-known actor throwing that out there like that, I took Danny DeVito's speech and threw it right out there, just as Danny DeVito mentioned. But I have to tip my hat to both teams. I tip my hat to North Carolina for getting the lead, losing the lead, and we're down by double digits, fighting their way back to get into the game. And Villanova watching that lead get brought to a tie and still having the, you know, the aura to say, you know what, we're going to set up a play and come up with a big shot to knock this down. Shout out to Roy Williams, because Roy Williams up there doing as much as he could, injured. I mean, he was injured. He ain't even playing. Roy Williams not even playing, and he injured. You know what I'm saying? And called a timeout at the right time. Marcus Page hit a three in the corner. I mean, doing the best that he could to get his North Carolina Tar Heels right for this championship. And Jay White, I'm jealous. I'm not going to lie. You know, me being a Hoyer fan or a diehard Hoyer fan, and all of the epic matchups with D.C. versus Philly, the Wildcats versus the Hoyas, Cat, Dog, and Wright versus Thompson. Like, it always been us. Like, I always seen this. Like, Big East Conference, you know, Allen Ray, you know, Kyle Lowry. I'm not going to throw names out there. Kerry Kittles. I remember all of these matchups. Like this is what I remember. So it's like, all I know is Big East basketball. That's all I was growing up around from all of the matchups. I can think about the worst team from Rutgers going on up to Seton Hall. I mean, I just think about the Big East and all the matchups that these guys go through on a yearly basis. Big East basketball forever. I can care less what nobody tells me. They stole six teams from the conference, brought them to the ACC, and who won? So, but I don't even want to pan into that. Like, I want to give people shout-outs all across the board. Chris Jenkins, I think he made a name for himself. I think, I'm even going to say he's going to be a first-round pick. But I think a lot of teams will start looking at him like this guy got big shot presence, similar to Mario Chalmers. When Mario Chalmers hit that shot against Memphis, back with Derrick Rose and Dozier and all those boys going crazy with Calipari, this shot right here could have him ready for, you know, game time situation. I don't want to say give him the ball at the end of the game in the NBA. I don't think he's ready for that, but he could be. He could be. Everything's on the line. This is a championship game. Like I said, to me, I may get some wrong views and people may disagree with me, but this is what the cookout is about. I'm ready for fire. I think this was the best national championship game ever played. Ever played. Okay, so let me open this thing up. I got people here in the calling, too, before we get into it. First and foremost, calling out of the Virginia region, we have Tommy in the building. Tommy, welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm here. For how long, I don't know. I'm at the hospital trying to find out what doctor says. I'm here.
Okay, well, if you're at the hospital, man, you do what you got to do, man. Look, we secondary, man. If it's a health need, do what you got to do, man. Like, I want you to be all right, man. At the end of the day, don't force yourself to be here, man. That's for sure, man. Well, do what you want. Do what you want. You know I support you in any move you make. For real, and I got your back. I just want to make sure everything's okay down there in the metro, that's for sure. And also calling in by way of the 203 region, we have Mikey D in the building. Welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
TP, what a game last night. Great intro. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better basketball game, a better way to end this tournament. I mean, Villanova comes out, you know, makes the three. Not only that, the screen that was set to set up the three with the handoff was a play that went underrated in this. But, I mean, they come down. North Carolina makes a three to tie it up after making the comeback. I mean, you just couldn't ask for a better game. I mean, I would compare it to the North Carolina State Championship game. I was young watching that. But, I mean, I'd never seen a better finish. It was just guys made shots. I mean, that's exactly what you want out of a championship game.
And you know what, Mike? I want you to throw that out there. Like, I want to see if people could come up with a better game scenario. That's an interesting one. North Carolina State versus Houston, five slam a Dynamo versus Jimmy V. That's an interesting one. I mean, you know, Royce, I mean,
Michigan,
your thoughts on
North
the game?
Carolina.
Ooh, Chris Webber with the travel. And me and Royce were just talking about that game in the green room. We were just talking about that in the green room. Okay, Michigan, North Carolina. I don't know. I don't know, man. That's tough.
Hey,
Kansas,
Syracuse.
Y'all going down memory lane. And I think it's a lot of great games, you know, and I respect and I appreciate all the history that's been made in terms of, like, the previous tournament contest. But, man, I'm trying to, like, stay in this moment, me personally, because that was such a tremendous game. I don't even want to compare it to anything right now because it steps in front of those who have gone before them because we had an actual buzzer-beating championship moment. Like, you crown the champ with the final shot. There is no, okay, you got to play out 0.3 seconds or 1.5 seconds, maybe a shot goes up and they miss or whatever. Like, no, it was no waiting. It was just perfect timing. You couldn't have scripted it any better. And the legendary Bill Walton pretty much said it best. He said, basketball is the perfect game. All you have to do is wait for the tip. That's all we had to do. The ball was tipped last night, and it was instant drama. It was classic. It was basketball perfection. It was everything that you have grown to love about the game of basketball, a tale of two halves. One team develops the lead. The other team hangs around, and they're not quite looking like the team that they were in the previous game when they seemed to dominate their opponent in that matchup, and it was looking like they were about to get dominated and lose the chip, and you were wondering, did they expend all their energy? Did they use up all their mojo against Oklahoma? And then it was halftime, and Jay Wright does that interview at halftime before the game starts in the second half, and he doesn't sound really confident. But is he acting? Is he pretending? Is he not letting you know what he's got up his sleeve? Because the next thing you know, it's Villanova basketball. But the beauty of Villanova playing their basketball, UNC was like, it's cool. We're not going anywhere. We're going to come back. We're going to play our style. And, yes, it might take a little bit of a miracle prayer shot by Paige, but it was delivered. I thought the final score was going to be 74-71. But Paige hits the shot, and I'm saying to myself, like, okay, we got overtime. No. Jay Wright said, no, I got to play. Timeout. I'm drawing it up. It happens all the time in the NBA. See, we see this all the time in the NBA. It's not that we ever seen it really in the collegiate level on a big stage like the national championship game and somebody deliver the goods or even be drawn up. Kick the ball in. You got your point guard bringing it up. He's a threat to shoot and score. So the ball's in the right man's hands in terms of who's going to be the major decoy. And you got your big man. He's running. You see him about to set up the screen. Everybody knows the screen is coming, and everybody's worried about Archie. And Archie says, I got the trailer wide open. No one's near the trailer. I'm going to put dibs in on this right here, Ty. We're going to develop KJ Chippehoy cookies, Chris Jenkins, because he delivered the chips last night, okay? This dude, like he said, he won two steps. As soon as he did that with nobody around, I said, game over. Game over. He watched it sail through like a pro, raised his hands, and his legendary status. He doesn't have to do anything for the next 5 to 6 years. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter if he's drafted or not.
No, okay, keep going, because it paused on you. Keep going.
Okay, my fault. No, I'm just saying it doesn't matter if he gets drafted or not. I mean, because the dude just hit legendary status. I mean, anytime you get a tweet from Christian Laettner that says, you know, I'm passing the torch, I'm passing the baton to, like, the greatest shot in college basketball history is now belongs to Chris Jenkins. Come on, man. You got that from Christian Laettner. Everybody saw Christian Laettner's shot as the shot in NCAA tournament history. Now it's Chris Jenkins. Congratulations right. to the Villanova Wildcats, man. That's all I can say. I'm not going to compare okay. their title game to anybody's. They own the night. They own it. They own the. They probably own until somebody does what he did. He might own the next 31 seasons, 31 years.
right. And I'm getting personal here at Sports City. I'm getting personal, and I'm not an ACC guy, so I'm not getting personal in that respect. Man, F Christian Laettner, okay? Something like Christian Laettner. Oh, yeah, F. Talk about I got the best shot in college basketball. I do not want to hear that. Listen, ever since I was a kid, I did not like Christian Laettner and still don't like him just because he was a Duke Blue Devil. And my father was a diehard Blue Devil fan, just rubbing it in my face all about Christian Laettner. So I do not want to hear it. But that's just me being personal. Like I said, to me, I think that's the best national championship game I have ever seen. And just like Tommy said, the Michigan North Carolina game could be one. Mikey D just threw in the North Carolina State Houston game with Clyde Drexler, Hakeem Olajuwon. I mean, all the star set of guys in that situation. You're right, Royce. Like, it's not even been a full 24 hours and we're throwing comparisons to some games, but you're going to get that. You're going to get that, whether it's here in the cookout or across sport atmosphere. You're going to get, you know, the top 10 games that were played ever, so on and so forth. Just the whole comparison. And even if they do, Royce, even if they do throw that out there, I give this Villanova and North Carolina game number one. I will debate it. Both of these teams faced deficits, had to make their way back into the game. North Carolina faced a deficit with just, what, 2 minutes on the clock? 2 minutes on the clock. They were facing at least a two-possession game. And Villanova shoots the ball well from the free throw line and from the perimeter. They do everything. They got everything. Villanova got too much. They got too much. And North Carolina got back into the game. Marcus Paige shot the crazy three-point shot. He shot that like it was a horse shot. Like they was playing a horse. And Marcus Paige said, yo, double clutch, do the Sean Kemp legs, and hit this. You know what I'm like? Like, what? Like, I'm telling you. Okay, so.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Both teams were ridiculous from three.
Right. It's getting hot, Sports City. They must smell what's going on in the kitchen. Calling out of Arizona, we have Nacho in the box. Welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling good. I'm on Skype, so if I start transforming or cut off, that's the reason why. But, yeah, feeling good tonight. Feeling good.
Okay, and Sports City, back away from the kitchen. Calling in from the Virginia region of the United States of America, people. Aaron Sirius Simmons is in the building, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't think you were coming to the kitchen. Round of applause, people. Aaron Sirius Simmons in the kitchen. Round of applause. I'm on my seat, ladies and gentlemen. I'm on my seat. Okay. Now, I'm glad to have this brother, you know, present himself here, you know, because I didn't think that it would happen. And he graced me with his presence here. But I got to be nice. Because, look, like I told you at the top of the show, I don't like losing, especially in that form or fashion. I even put a post up. I said, I'd rather get blown out, even though I want to get blown out, but I'd rather get beat bad than to lose on a buzzer beater where we can't even touch the ball again. Like, let me get a tip. Like, let's do something. Set up a play, man. Set up a play. But, Sirius, welcome. How are you feeling this evening?
You know, man, I've been better. I'm not going to even front. I'm in God is good all the time, and none of that. Your boy's just right now. I don't know what I'm saying, but I'm in the building. What up, everybody? How y'all doing?
Yeah. Now, listen, like I told you, Big East basketball. I want to hear all that ACC track. Y'all can take whoever y'all want. Basketball lives in the East. It lives in the East. But let me get your thoughts on the game, because you being a Tar Heel fan, I want to hear how you felt about the game and the situations both teams were faced with.
You know, honestly, man, it was a well-fought game, well-played game. And I'm going to take it from a different angle, because a lot of Tar Heel fans was like, you know what, Villanova got lucky. Let's keep it 100. We were actually blessed to be in a position to play for overtime, because if you look from about 9.5 minutes up until Marcus hit that shot, we were getting beat every facet of the game. We couldn't see the ball inside. You know, Bryce Johnson was, not getting touches. You know, defensively, we couldn't go off the pick and roll. They were getting wide open jumpers off the pick and pop. As a Tar Heel fan, yes, I'm upset that we lost in the manner of which we did. I really am. But you really have to tip your cap to the Villanova Wildcat squad, because they figured out a way to get the ball out of our big hand. They find a way for us to rely on our jump shot. And if it wasn't for Marcus Page heroics with 2 minutes left to go in that ball game, there'd be no need for Chris Jenkins triple at the buzzer. You know, so congratulations to them. On the flip side, we all knew, we hit the shot with 4 seconds left to go in the ballgame. We all knew what was going on. We knew. I saw him out there, it's going to be a dribble handoff. We got to switch on the pick and roll, which we haven't been doing all damn game long. This dude had time to check his Facebook, order Chinese food, jack off, and hit a three-pointer, and thank his mom in the process. We had some charges that was wide open. So, it is what it is, but congratulations to them. And I hope, Jackson and company, don't get haunted about penning their dreams. But, unfortunately, it is what it was.
Okay. Mikey B, your thoughts on what you've heard thus far on the game situation, if you view things differently. Even the color commentators, and I know Royce might take this a different way also, but how the refs were actually, I guess they were throwing it at Sam being inconsistent, because a lot of the ticky-tack calls were being called and some of the brutal plays weren't being called. I mean, your thoughts on that situation, on how the heights of the game were, hitting highs and lows like crazy.
Well, Sirius, you're a bigger man than I am, because Keith Smart's jump shot still hurts me to this day. So for you to sit there and say that you're okay with Villanova winning, you're a bigger man than me. I just think the magic of this game last night, guys, was the fact that both teams made shots down the stretch. That's all you could ask for a good basketball game. The game wasn't won on, turnovers or mistakes made by one team or the other. Shots were made, by both sides. Miracle shots. That little slip screen was the difference to give Jenkins the room to make that shot. It was just such a well-played game. You got two elite coaches. Now Jay Wright steps into the elite group of coaches with a national championship. So, the ticky-tack fouls, forget about it. That game, came down to the buzzer. Both teams made shots, and it was just a tremendous basketball game to watch.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. Not to...
That was right.
Go ahead,
jump in before everybody goes. Well, not everybody, because it's nothing against what everybody says and thinks, but, everybody knows that I officiate, but that was a well-officiated game last night, and what you saw that a lot of people are calling ticky-tack, that's how the game should be called. But, unfortunately, every game doesn't get the national championship or a championship treatment. That's just the sad reality of it, but if you understand what the officials are being asked to do by the officiating board and the committees, the NC2A that govern the game, it's allow freedom of movement and things like that. Not chuck players, not place two hands on the ball handler on the perimeter, clean it up in the post, blah blah blah. So you can get what you got last night. great basketball where you got to move your feet, be in the in defensive position, you know, legally, not illegally, okay? If it's illegal contact, you're going to get the foul call. And if you commit a violation, you're going to get the whistle. And that's why you got great basketball and the players decided the game. That's what should be said, that the officiating did not determine the game. Whether you saw, which it was might be in your opinion, some ticky-tack, what you're really saying is the official didn't decide the game. And they never do anyway, but no, it wasn't about officiating. It was about Villanova. It was about UNC. Like you said, it was about the shot-making of those teams. I mean, when you're talking about both of these teams shot well over 50% from three, Nova shot 57%, and UNC, thanks probably to that miraculous shot, finished the game shooting basically 65% from three. I mean, who shoots like that in the national championship game? I mean, we had great basketball, man, great basketball. Like I said, salute to both teams, man.
I didn't get your thought or opinion of you on this game or your thoughts on the national championship game. And I think I've been saying it all year long, calling a lot of these games, whether it be NBA, college basketball, with the shot, especially with Steph Curry hitting the shot on the Thunder or, you know, games of that nature. Now, this right here, just like Roy said, no time on the clock. You hear the buzzer sound. Everybody in the arena is quiet because you don't know what's going to happen. He bangs the shot. And the crazy part is just watching the confetti fly, watching North Carolina walk to their sideline. It's like now you start to feel bad because they can't get another shot. Like they did all they could. And you know it's like, you know, Villanova with the ball. They got the cooties. You don't want to touch them. You don't want to be the one to pick up that foul while they're in the double bonus and put them on the free throw line. So it's like you got to try and contest the dribble while you're trying to get as close as you can to knock down the shot. Jump without touching this guy or breathing in his direction without the ref feeling some type of way. They played it the best they could. You know, they say greater defense.
That screen gave him the room. That was the key. I mean, that goes underlooked here. He gave him just enough room to get that shot off. I mean, that kid was – I can't even pronounce his last name. But what a tremendous tournament he had. I mean, he just gave Jenkins enough room to make that shot, and that piece goes underrated. I mean, great, great off-the-ball basketball play.
And that was Archie Diacono, right? Because I finally got his name right. I was practicing all last night. Look. I've been watching this guy since his third college.
Archie Diacono.
Right. I've been watching them since the freshman year in college, could never pronounce it right, and was hearing them say it like that. I was like, I'm going to get it right in the kitchen, okay? So it's Archie Diacono, okay? I don't know what he is, if he's Italian or from some European country. I got it now, okay? But I wonder if he does end up making the team in the league. Look, but that, listen, him and another unsung hero. There's two unsung heroes from Villanova. A lot of people aren't even giving credit to. One is Josh Hart. Josh Hart did a lot of the elbow work for these guys. And Achefu, the big man out in New York City. I mean, great work. I mean, team basketball to the utmost. And that's both teams. North Carolina played team ball. The one thing about North Carolina, I think, fell by the wayside was the electric start that Barry had. Barry had a great start to the first half, and in the second half, I think he tried to get it rolling again, and he was forcing the issue instead of, I don't know, trying to move the ball to get other people involved because his shot wasn't falling like it was early in the game. But, Nacho, your thoughts on this game, though?
Everyone's already pretty much said everything about the game itself. There's not too much to reiterate. It was a great game all around, obviously. The couple things I will touch on, though, is the greatest game or greatest shot aspect that was, you know, tagline, hashtagged or whatever after the game. I think the biggest problem, or not problem, but the biggest thing that a lot of games these days have that obviously games 15, 20 years ago didn't have was Facebook and Twitter and things of that nature, Snapchat and yada, yada, yada. I know people who were at work huddled around a 10-inch screen watching it on Facebook, watching it on Twitter, watching it on, you know, any number of outlets other than a television set. So when you have that many people watching a game of that magnitude go down the way it did, it automatically is going to get high praise and it's going to get high everything and be the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, you know, that part to me, you know, it'll be for, you know, it is the hottest thing right now. Like Arian or like Aaron or someone else said, you know, until the next big shot comes around, it'll be the biggest thing since then. In this day and age with the social media, I give it about a week and a half before it's forgotten. And there's another big shot and another game. We got the NBA playoffs coming up here in a couple weeks. So to me, it is a great shot. It is a great game. It was amazing to watch down the stretch. Like Mike said, there was proficient offense, and it was just a great game as a spectator of the sport. Not having a horse in the race to pull for, it was just great to watch in general. The referee thing or whatever, I didn't really like Roy said, I didn't really think about the refs, which is a great thing because they were doing their job. I didn't really feel ticky tack or not making the big calls at certain areas was something that I was keen on. More or less, the great play that was going on from both teams, more or less Villanova in the second half, but to me, it was just a great overall game. And like I said, the social media is going to blow up the shot. When you got Leitner tweeting out something, I'm sure, you know, 15 years ago, if there was a big shot, he couldn't tweet it out to 20, 25, 30 million people and have it instantaneously read and opinionated on. So it's a little hard pressed for me just to say that because of one tweet, because of Leitner and yada, 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 and that stuff. I just can't bring it up there quite yet. Maybe. Like Roy said, give it a couple days. Maybe it'll sink in and things of that. But the game itself was just fun to watch.
Let me help you out. Christian Leitner shot against Kentucky with Jamal Mashburn, one of my favorite basketball players in college basketball history. That was a national semifinal game. And yes, it's the Final Four. But you got to get to the final to make it happen. You know what I'm saying? Like this was it. Like there is nothing after this shot. After he released it, everybody in Pennsylvania, everybody in the state of North Carolina, their hearts are stopped. Breath is held.
You know what?
Yeah, after this,
I think Mario Chalmers shot, you know, against Memphis had to go up there, too. I like the Mario Chalmers shot.
Chalmers shot sent it to overtime. This shot sent you home.
After Jenkins shot, we go home. You know, somebody, you know, cries in celebration, and then somebody cries in agony of defeat. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
We dancing
right.
after Jenkins shot. We're not going another 2-3 to 5 minutes.
I'm a Packers fan. I get the divinity of a one last Hail Mary second play. I play. You walk off the field, you win. I understand that, but just. Like I said, you get the social media age. Like I said, you go back 10, 12 years, you go to that Mario shot, imagine Twitter, imagine with Facebook, imagine with the ability to have the 360 camera like I saw 20 times today where you can just motion with your phone back and forth and follow what you want to follow. They didn't have that. And when you have that, it makes it easier for everyone to see and go ooh and ah and for it to be the greatest thing to me. So I think a lot of things get pushed into the greatest atmosphere in this day and age before, you know, 24 hours had even come.
When Chalmers hit that shot, Facebook and Twitter was out. Just to let you know, when Chalmers hit that shot, both of the networks were out. But see,
you're talking about 100 million. No. You can't just lay that out there because when you talk about Facebook and Twitter, in the past 3 years, Facebook and Twitter have grown over 100 million, and Twitter has grown over 250 million in 3 years. So just talking about just because they were out, that's different than we talk about now. So you're talking about one person has over 21 million followers on Twitter. In 2000, was it in the Chalmers shot, maybe one person had over 1 million followers. There's a big difference between when Chalmers took the shot, Twitter, and now. You have to realize that before you just start laying out Skip Bayless-type facts like that.
Oh no. This ain't a Skip Bayless-type fact. This is real talk. Listen, Chalmers sent it to overtime. There was a tomorrow after the shot, bro. There was a tomorrow after that shot. Memphis still had a shot. They still had D-Rolls, Joey Dozier, all those boys were coming back on the floor. Jenkins hit that shot. And let me just put this in perspective, okay? Chalmers is probably like a foot behind the three-point line. Jenkins was like 7 feet deep behind that 3-point line on a set shot. Like he set his feet up to shoot that. That wasn't like no, oh, let me just throw this up like Chauncey Billups did back up against Detroit and hit this one from half. No, he set his feet. Even Jay Wright looked at him. Watch the replay. Jay Wright looked at him when he released the ball. He said, bang, he hit the shot. He was already in motion walking to Roy Williams. He already knew that shot was gold. Like, understand that this game can Marcus Page's shot. Who would have thought Marcus Page would have drilled the three right there? Like that. That last 10 seconds right there, epic. Like I couldn't even look. You didn't even have another team on the side of the ball. Memphis making a play like that. Like everybody remembers that Memphis was up three. Trauma came down with some freaky three, knocked down. They went overtime, and Kansas took care of business. North Carolina could not do nothing else. As soon as Jenkins hit the shot, they put the kid right on there to say that they hit it. Everybody crying. Like I said, the emotion was all there. To me, I think best basketball game or national championship game I've ever seen, especially with North Carolina dominating everybody they played. And you know, I don't really like to try to throw this in there, but Vegas had North Carolina favored by 2 points. So you already knew this was going to be a close game, especially with the way that Villanova punched Oklahoma in the mouth. You know what I'm saying? So that's the way I weigh the scenario on this. But like I said, it's a good one. So, of course, we're going to go back and forth. We got another caller here as well. They haven't seen this guy in a while. Calling out of the Golden State region of the United States of America. Breaking news, Brian Hughes. Welcome to the Cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
What's going on, boys? How you doing?
Doing all right. Your thoughts and how you feeling?
Well, I've been listening in. I've been hearing everybody's thoughts. I will say this, Ty. I think the last minute of that game is quite possibly the best minute of basketball that we've seen. But to say that that's the best championship game, I don't know if I would take it that far. And especially as you the Hoyas guy, I think Villanova's game against Georgetown, the first championship, was a much better game. When you look at just how the buildup was, how, you know, Georgetown was this unstoppable force, I just think that there has been better games, better storylines, but I think the last minute of that game was phenomenal. But, to me, what this boils down to, and I don't know if this will help with recruiting, I don't know if this will help with potentially getting kids to stay around, but to me, this is all about being calm under pressure, about understanding your system, about knowing what it takes to succeed. And you look at Villanova, they're a team that is very, very, very much the senior to most of the teams they play. They have seniors, juniors, sophomores on their team. You look at teams like Duke, Kansas, and even for that matter, UNC, you have a lot of young players. And the one thing I give Villanova a ton of credit for, and Jay Wright, is you look at what they did every single game they played, whether it was against Johnson in this last game or Bobby Hull or Fields or you name it, they basically locked down the number one option and said, you're going to beat us with somebody else. That's what they did. And you know what? It sounds simple to say, but it's so much harder to actually execute. And I give Villanova a ton of credit. And like I said, I don't think that we as fans put enough emphasis on how much experience plays into this. Remember, you look at Villanova's roster, guys, you go up and down that roster, you're talking about guys that are 21, 22, sometimes even 23, playing against 18-year-old kids. Now, that 18-year-old may be more talented, but he's still 23 years old, the guy he's playing against. Much more physical, much more developed, both mentally and physically, and I think that plays a huge part. I mean, to me, that was the difference in the game. You know what? UNC had the lead at halftime, and they never looked like they were out of the game. They always looked like they had confidence they were going to come back and win that game. And you know what? When UNC made that last-second shot, I think the whole reason that they just forgot to defend is it was almost a sigh of relief, like, oh, my God, we get to go to overtime after that horrible second half. And you know what? Villanova just didn't give up on the play.
Excellent points. I love those points, Brian. I mean, those are right on the spot. And it's absolutely what's been missing from basketball, period. That's what makes better basketball. Because there was a damn time, like, you know, pretty much what I grew up watching, you had to go to your junior or senior year for the most part before you went on to the NBA or before you were seen as a player who could really, you know, contribute at the next level and be somebody that, you know, teams could, you know, expect greatness from, like you said, being poised and being under control, not being afraid of the big moment. And now all of a sudden, you know, we hit that era where the NBA said, well, you know, let's get guys straight out of high school because they have so much talent. And, you know, just like those organizations and GMs, you know, they wanted to take credit for developing some stars. And, you know, yeah, we did have some success, you know, with that. You did have, you know, the Kevin Garnetts and guys like that. But now the one-and-done thing is getting old. It's time for the pendulum to swing again. And we've got to get back to the juniors and seniors. That's why we have the Steph Currys. That's why we have the Damian Lillards, guys like that who are playing 3 to 4 years. I think even Kawhi Leonard played till he was a junior before he came out. I mean, those guys are, like I said, their body is ready. They're mentally ready. And they understand what it takes to embrace the process to being great, of succeeding and performing at a very high level and not being rattled. So, excellent point. I'm glad you said it. And that's what we need. So, I was, you know, we would all, you know, echo that anytime we were on the air, you know, because we got to change the landscape of basketball back to a better brand and not just a more talented brand, but a more efficient, effective, beautiful game to watch. Because it is beautiful when you got guys like that who know what they're doing and how to do it. And they just went out and executed what Jay Wright had drawn up for them in that last 2 seconds.
Okay, you know what? I agree with you more, though. The only comment that I would make, and I know you had the face palm, but myself, as they're dribbling down the court with 4 seconds to go, who's the one guy? And I know, and I'm probably going to butcher the kid's name. I'm driving. The guard, Archicano or Arch something like that. I'm thinking the only two guys on Villanova that you do not want to take a shot from behind the arc is the guy you just mentioned and Jenkins. And you know what? They both could have taken the shot. What? I don't know what the hell happened.
And one thing about it, if you watch the entirety of the game, Jenkins was hitting shots like that all night long. He was not – listen, every time he touched the ball since he moved to senior night, he wasn't giving the ball to nobody. He was taking that shot every time he came around the rim. Like, if he was in range, he was shooting, and he was drilling that shot. This is like you said, the experience and being prepared for the moment. But I think this has been the makeup all season long for a team like Villanova because they've been playing tough contender or tough player after tough player within the conference. They've gone up against the likes of Chris Dunn, a guy that, you know, is an All-American and had to slow him in the fryers down, or going up against a Devontae Smith Rivera and watching Devontae go off for 20 the next time they played him, they held him to 5 points. Like, this guy was an All-American. Like, they've been going up against All-Americans and watching these guys have freaky games and then studying the blueprint or going to the film room and making sure that they slow this guy down. And then the phenomenal one was what they did to Buddy Hield in the Final Four. Buddy Hield just scored a 37-point game the game previous, and they held Buddy Hield to 9 points with 1-3 made. So he had 6 points outside of the three-point line, 1 for 8 for 3, and basically slowed him down for the remainder of the game. Villanova steered the course from the tournament of 68 all the way till there was one left. And it was them at the end of the tunnel. So, I mean, epic stuff. Like I said, what you actually throwing that out there with the Georgetown Villanova game, Villanova shot over 70%, and Georgetown was still within the game, but they sat on the ball at the end of the game, basically just not letting the ball get out of, you know, in proportion to Georgetown and do something else. This was a tie game with 4 seconds left, and I don't know, man. I don't know. And just like you said, I'm a little pain, and I'm giving it up to Villanova. Like, this ending right here, the way that this game went down, Man, I know more than three handfuls of North Carolina Tar Heel fans, serious being one of them. I mean, just knowing that this isn't the way that they wanted it to go down, it went down. Like, I can't think of no better ending. Like, that was epic stuff. Epic stuff. Okay, anything else around this national championship or, you know, how these teams move forward, especially with a lot of these players going into the draft, like a Bryce Johnson, like Marcus Pace, like Archie Diacono, like a Chefu. I mean, there's names. Chris Jenkins also, does he put himself into the first or second round in this draft? Do you think he'll be undrafted? Do you think they'll overlook him despite his output in his game? Because I have this written down, too. Was this just a one-hit wonder type of situation, or does he make a name for himself? Similar, not calling him a Jordan, not calling him Michael Jordan, but similar to how Michael Jordan made a name for himself in the national championship. Okay,
well,
the silence helps. Okay.
Hey, Ty,
yeah.
I will say this. I think we learned a lot during this this run to the Final Four, if you will. I think Buddy Hield, I think he showed that he is probably the purest shooter in the draft. He can make from all over the court, and I think he's going to be a top five pick. I think he's probably a top three pick, but with everybody's so enamored right now with Steph Curry, everybody's looking for the next Steph Curry. And I'm not saying he's the next Steph Curry, but he's about the closest thing to Steph Curry in this draft, a guy who can make it from all over the court, a guy who can create his own shot. What's really interesting to me, though, about this draft is, you know, every year it's like we have that one guy who's a slam dunk number one, and then it's like everybody else kind of, you know, sifting the pieces, trying to figure out who you're going to take. And, you know, like last year it was Towns. Well, I'll tell you, and I might be the only one, but I'm not sold on Simmons. And, you know, I don't know if Ingram from Duke did enough to supplant him, but I will tell you, I think there's enough question marks with the ball handling, with his perimeter shooting, with his free throw shooting, with his off-the-field issues, with not being able to make it to class. I think Simmons and the fact that they didn't even make the tournament, I think it may end up costing him some money.
That's tough. I still think Ben will be a top five pick. I still think he'll be a top five pick. I don't know if he'll be top three or the number one pick because of the way that Buddy Hield has performed. But I still think that this guy, he has an all-purpose game. He can come off the floor. If you need him to pass, he'll pass. Look, he went to LSU with nothing around him. He was making a storm down there as a freshman, like, with nothing around him. Like, a lot of these freshmen that come out with a ton of talent, they have at least two or three guys with them that they get to play ball with and grow with. Like, he was going into a situation. When have you last heard of LSU being relevant in college basketball? Like, let's be honest. Since Shaq?
Yeah,
let me move up even further. Like Tyrus Thomas, like do you want me to do that? Like and when Tyrus Thomas made the tournament, like they got bumped in the Sweet 16. Like, no, I couldn't.
Yeah, but here's the problem with Simmons, though. In my eyes, I get it. If you can't control the talent around you, but my problem is you look at that team and how they played down the stretch. His teammates quit on him, plain and simple. That team just absolutely fell apart down the stretch. And you know what? If you can't get your teammates to play hard for you, that's an indictment, dude. Whether or not it's going to prevent him from being a top three pick, I get he's a freshman, but you know what? So is every other guy that's going to be picked in the top 10. I mean, let's be honest, right? So is every other guy that's been picked in the top 10 in the last 5 years. Everybody's going to be a freshman because that's who the talent is. But you know what? What I'm saying is this. I'm not saying he's not potentially the most talented player in his draft, but what I'm saying is I think there is enough question marks where before it was a foregone conclusion he's going to be the number one pick. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion anymore.
No, well, this is why I'm saying that. All the guys that you mentioned in this draft, they are somewhat of an upperclassman. You know, whether you, I can't even really think of a sophomore that's coming out, but you got juniors and seniors that are coming out in this draft. He's 18 years old. How does he get in front of that team and tell seniors and juniors what to do? Like he was already gracious enough to score what he needed to score. The one thing I think Simmons actually lacks, which a lot of people think the jury is still out on, which I agree with them, is his jump shot, his jump shot picking ability. Other than that, he's a 5'2 player. He comes on the floor and can do it all for your team. And let alone, it depends on what a team needs out the gate, because more than likely, it's going to be Philadelphia that's going to be the top pick. And it depends on how this lottery falls into place, which I really think if the Sixers don't get it, it's blasphemy or something. But the Sixers need a guy like Buddy Hield, so I think out the gate, Buddy Hield is number one. But number two, depending on how this situation pans out, if they need a guy to play the three that can, distribute, rebound, and score, Simmons will fall right there. Ingram was basically a role player in Duke's system. Like, Simmons had to try and be the guy and fix leaks, and LSU had the place to go try and fix leaks and be the guy in SEC country. Like, I think it's different, especially with Ingram being surrounded by Coach K-led squad.
Well, I'm going to say this, man. I've been saying this, all season long. In any order, the better business bureau is what I call them, Ben Simmons, Buddy Hield, Brandon Ingram. I think they go 1, 2, 3. The actual order, it probably won't be so much based on the talent or the potential, but more so exactly of how the lottery falls with who exactly has the first pick and things of that nature, because that's really where it was. It was up in the air last year. I mean, Towns has played, obviously, like the hands-down, lockdown number one pick that he was once selected. But prior to his announced selection all season long, I mean, it was conversation of will it be Towns, will it be Okafor, is it going to be D'Angelo Russell out of Ohio State? Should Philadelphia get that number one pick? And now it's like we're repeating that same process. And not being a big Ben Simmons fan, because I'm pulling for Buddy Hield to arrive in Philadelphia, regardless of where they select, I'll give it up to him. This freshman kid did play 35 minutes. He did shoot 56% from the field on only 11.7 field goal attempts per game. He got to the free throw line 9 times, and he wasn't the greatest shooter. He was 6 of 9, exactly 67%, and this guy averaged 19 and 12 and 4.8. You talking 19, 12, 5 with 2 steals and at 0.8 blocks. That's basically a block a game. That's a difference maker. I don't know if he has the mentality and if he's ready at 18 to lead. You know what I'm saying? Like, not all the time are 18-year-olds ready to step into a situation where they put a team or a franchise or an organization on their back in terms of expectations and can go out and deliver that in terms of leadership. The leadership takes time. I can be patient and wait on his leadership, but to know and see that he's a willing passer, he will rebound, he's in that mold of a LeBron James. And when I say that, I'm not comparing him to LeBron James. I'm just saying that similar to LeBron, he knows he could do everything, but it's like when we talked about LeBron when he first came out, we was like, man, but he don't got that killer like Jordan. Because we was used to seeing guys like Jordan, Kobe, and AI who, when it was winning time, they took the shots, not made the winning play or the winning pass, but they took the shots. So Ben Simmons is more of a LeBron and a Magic Johnson, that they don't always have to take the winning shots, but they will make the smartest basketball decision if you put the ball in their hand to try to give their team the best chance at winning. So, you know, those are some of the things that I've seen that I like about Ben Simmons. Brandon Ingram, I think, is raw. I think he's risky. I wouldn't select him. But, you know, when it comes to Buddy Hield, we've seen it. This guy's putting up 29 points And, I mean, like you said, he can score from everywhere. He could have attempted to try and make more plays in that Villanova matchup, like the one where he weaved through the two guys who were guarding him and went up on one side, floated under the rim, ended up with a reverse layup. But he would have had to take shots like that for the rest of the night just to try to get back into the game, and that's not a smart thing to do. That probably would have hurt his stock as opposed to just taking the L that they took. And if I'm a GM, I don't hold that final game of college ball against Buddy Hield because that was a great game plan. And only in college will you be able to load up an entire team and make sure everybody is focused on one man. When he gets to the NBA and he's playing with other NBA talents, you got to pick your poison. He might get double teamed at best his rookie year. They're not going to throw three people at him. He may get double teamed at best, but he's going to have a great coaching staff, great assistant coaches, veteran players hopefully around him, former players that are on coaching staff these days that will be able to talk to him and get him through situations like that within the midst of that game. He won't have to wait till the next game. They'll get him through it in that game. Plus, it's an entertainment league, so they're going to make sure that Buddy's going to get some shots. For what? So he can keep putting asses in seats because he's that electric. So those are the guys that I think go in the top three. That's what really kind of came out of you know, college basketball this year. To me, that's what really all the talk is going to be about between now and then.
Okay. Anything else around these three guys or the end of college basketball up until this point? I mean, this is, and just not even behind that game alone. I mean, even in this tournament, we see buzzer beater after buzzer beater, shot after shot. Northern Iowa with that shot from half court, you know, knocking the team out. The guy Jesperson coming up with a big time shot. I mean, this tournament has been nothing short of epic. Like, almost every game had that edge of your seat tally, unless it was, you know, the blowouts from the beginning of the situation. But every game, I mean, hell, Michigan State, I'm not even going to lie, messed up both of my brackets. I had Michigan State get into the finals. They went home in the first round. Like this,
Michigan State and Kansas.
Well, Kansas won only Elite Eight. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that was my other bracket. I had Kansas winning the other one. You know what I'm saying? Like, thanks a lot for throwing that one out. But you had upset after upset. Teams that you didn't think would get this far did get that far. This tournament had some stuff. And a lot of people were actually picking on the committee, including myself. I was one that was picking on the committee on teams that should have made it, or guys like St. Mary's out there in California, or Monmouth that should have made it. Monmouth didn't even win the NIT. You know what I'm saying? And St. Mary's got bumped in the NIT. Like, so I think they called it to a T with a lot of the teams that they had in this tournament. I tip my hat to the tournament committee and say I thought that there should have been different teams in there. But everybody came to play. Syracuse, a 10th ranked team, making the Final Four, putting pressure on North Carolina. North Carolina getting there. Kansas being the overall number one, getting bumped up. I mean, everything was set up properly.
Ty, the only thing I'll say is this. You know, we're going to continue to critique what the committee does, but the committee has an incredibly difficult job. To try and figure out the 64 teams that make the tournament is incredibly difficult because, let's be honest, if they would have said Syracuse is out, the one of the first four out, I don't think anybody would have questioned that at all. I mean, they didn't play even like a 10 seed. So, you know, the only thing I would say is I would really like to see, this is just me as a basketball fan, I would really like to see the in-game format maybe expanded because I think, you know, you look at teams like Middle Tennessee who came up big against a 2-seed. They're a 15 seed. They could have just as easily missed the tournament. You see these teams coming up big, these small school teams, and all I'm saying is, you know what, there's a lot of teams like Syracuse that can have double-digit losses that don't make the tournament, and you see small schools that have 5-6 losses that miss the tournament. I think we need to expand that tournament and allow those small school teams to show what they can do against the big guys.
Ryan, you know what? I agree with you 10,000%. You want to know why? Because it's not fair to, like, a small school, like, and I hate to, like, throw this type of team out there, but, like, Hampton University, you put them in front of a Kansas or something like that. Like, you know, they don't stand a chance. Even though they'll play strong basketball and they'll have a run here and there, they're just outmatched. You will never see, in all of the years that the tournament has been there, you have never seen a 16th seed be the number one seed, no matter if they won their conference tournament or not. And I don't feel like you're basically setting them up to lose, you know, fresh out the gate. Like, thank you for participating. Here goes your parting gifts and go back to your respected universities. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's how I feel about that. But they are in the tournament together. So even if they were to end up winning games, they're going to end up bumping into the heavy hitters. And what? Is that when you give them their parting gifts to walk off the floor and so on and so forth? So I understand the nature of the beast, but at least give some of these teams that have the heart of a Middle Tennessee. Not to say Middle Tennessee, because Middle Tennessee did what they did in that first round, but ended up losing the next game. But the Austin Peays of the world, the Stephen F. Austin, because they had that guy, Travis Walkup. The guy was, he's a talent, you know, freshman Stephen F. Austin. I hope he makes a name for himself in the league. He has good size. I hope they can work with him, but it's just tough when they run into a buzzsaw of a team that basically is ready at the end of the day.
That's exactly what I'm saying, man. You know, I think the thing is, you know, we've never seen a 16 seed upset a number one seed, but we have now seen a number 15 seed beat a number two seed. And, oh, by the way, you weren't the only one that had Michigan State. I read an article that said something like 23% of brackets in Yahoo Sports had Michigan State going to the final game, meaning they were the second most favored team to make the championship game of any team in the tournament. So there's upsets that happen. Just remember, you know, Middle Tennessee could have just as easily been a 12 seed, and maybe they get a little further. So I just think there's a lot of small school teams that don't get the coverage, that don't get the notoriety, and you end up seeing teams like Syracuse, which, you know, give them all their props for making the run they did. But, you know, you win, you lose 10, 11 games, you probably shouldn't be a 10 seed.
The thing with the Syracuse situation is the legal stuff that they were facing at the beginning of the season, especially with Boeheim having a missed 9 game. That's what a lot of people are saying. That in the start that they had, they lost a handful of games, won a stretch, lost the stretch, put them above 10 losses. Like, they had, like, I think 12 or 13 losses on the season. Like, and they still made it. So, like, I don't know if it was based upon their name, if they're based upon Boeheim, and this was potentially one of Boeheim's last seasons. Boeheim was making it seem like he's not going to retire, but at the beginning of the season when he was facing the ban on the season, that he was saying that this was his last season in, you know, college basketball. So I don't know if they were basically giving him one last run to make things happen, but it all comes into the course of the game. That's not even teams playing their tails off. Like, I mean, what else could a lot of these teams do at the end of the day if they're not being viewed in the same mindset? You know, like Monmouth. Monmouth actually played my Georgetown Hoyas well and ended up falling short. Or St. Mary's, they only had like 3 losses on the season. They had like 2 or 3 losses in the season and didn't even make the tournament. It's like, what else do you want them to run the table? I mean, they beat a BYU. BYU made the tournament. They beat Gonzaga twice. They beat Gonzaga twice, and Gonzaga made the tournament. Like, that's critical on how they're viewing it. So I don't know. I don't know. Sit tight, boys. I do have a caller, a cue caller from the 609. Welcome to the cookout. What's your name? What's on your mind tonight?
We be kings and shit, niggas. I swear to God, man, I'm my fucking family.
There we go. That's cool. Okay, you're gonna get those. You're gonna get those. You know what I'm saying? Having a great show. So, well, it's a cookout, fellas. I didn't want to spend too much on national chip or the men's national championship. I know we got the women. I know a lot of y'all probably aren't into the women's basketball game. Any thought that comes to your mind, Bri, before we move it around the kitchen, whether it could be this, be it Connecticut and Syracuse going at it, your quarterback departing. I mean, you got some issues as well out there in the Bay. I mean, your thoughts.
Well, you know, and you know what? I don't know. It's kind of like Connecticut basketball for the women. It kind of reminds me of like the 80s, like when the Soviet Union used to be this like dominant, unbeatable force at hockey, and then finally, you know, the Americans broke through and won a game against them, and it was like, oh my God, we finally won a game against them. Like, that's what it's like when you play UConn. Like, people don't go into the game, the women's team, like thinking like we're gonna beat them. They're just thinking like, hey, let's not lose by 20 or more. I mean, when you get to the championship game tie and you're a double-digit underdog, I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. As far as my team, the San Francisco 49ers and the QB situation, look, organized sports at the high school and at the collegiate level. Ty, I know you played sports. All I'm going to say is this. You got 53 other dudes in the locker room. If somebody doesn't want to be there, then you don't want them there, because all they're going to be is a cancer in the locker room. You should have just released them. Teams are so worried about trying to get that third or fourth round pick, but the damage you're going to do in your locker room by keeping this guy around and the $12 million that you just paid him to sit in your locker room, you could have put those dollars somewhere else to better use.
Do you think he ends up somewhere else at the end of next season, yes or no?
I think he ends up somewhere else this season. I think this is the bottom line. If the Denver Broncos were dead set on not paying any more than what they're already willing to go, I think that they would have just stayed status quo. Look, they already traded for Mark Sanchez. I think that was just simply to take some pressure off their side, saying, hey, look, we already have a starting caliber quarterback, but obviously they're still looking. There's nobody out there. There's nobody out there, not unless they're going to go after Ryan Fitzpatrick. And he can't run Kubiak's zone stretch offense. He needs somebody that can stretch the ball, play action pass, you know, is mobile. And that's Kaepernick. That's what he does. He needs to develop. The problem is both of these teams, I think the Niners probably want a little too much compensation, and Denver doesn't want to pay starting quarterback money. They want Colin Kaepernick to make $4 million a year, and that's not realistic either.
Okay, Royce, I know that we actually talked about the UConn situation, and I don't know if you've actually been watching the San Francisco 49ers ordeal with Colin Kaepernick, the struggle that he's gone through since Jim Harbaugh has left. But your thoughts on either topic, whether it's Geno, because I can't wait to open up this situation, even though I live here. Like I said, I'm a Tennessee fan when it comes to the ladies. But just like Brian said, I mean, double-digit favorite in this national championship. I mean, what more can you say in that manner? And do you think Colin Kaepernick will remain a Niner, or do you think he'll be in Denver picking up where Peyton and Osweiler left off after winning a Super Bowl?
Well, I'm not the hugest, football follower or fan. I do know that Colin Kaepernick has been struggling, and things haven't been working well for them in San Francisco. So I believe in second chances and fresh starts. And from what I've heard, it would sound like a great move and a great opportunity for him if he stepped into that situation there in Denver. And I think that organization, when you talk about people like John Elway, I think it may be somewhat, I guess you would say, maybe a familiar, though it's new, it would be familiar, have a familiar feel to it for Kaepernick, because, you know, Harbaugh was a quarterback. Obviously, Elway was one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So, you know, I just think Kaepernick needs a second chance and a fresh start, so why not take that opportunity? But when it comes to women's college basketball, the Connecticut Huskies, Geno Auriemma,
You know, I think I posed this to you the other day, or it might have been somebody else I was talking to about this situation, because it's been kind of like heavy on my mind, because they have been so dominant for oh so long. If it was the men's game, people would be crying foul, and they would have cried foul like 10 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, break it up. It's not right. How is he getting all the blue chippers? You know, some people who are not fans or just wanted to stir up stuff would be like, is he really that good of a coach? Or is it the fact that his rosters are always loaded? And listen, I'm not saying all that now to say anything against UConn, the program, or Gino Auriemma, the man, the coach. I'm just saying that I think if the women's game continues to evolve, and it's doing that and explode, at some point, you want parity. You want to balance out the talent. And one thing, you know, I know from having daughters who played and been following the women's game pretty much since like 94, 95 on a regular basis, man, it only takes one girl, I mean, one woman for the most part, to make a difference in a program. So, I mean, this is a deep team, and they stay deep. You know, they have a 12-person roster, and, you know, half of them are upperclassmen in terms of juniors and seniors, and the other half, freshmen and sophomores. So it's not going to get any easier for teams next year, even, you know, with Breonna Stewart, you know, moving on to the next level. And imagine where this team would have been, you know, a few years had Elena Deladon remained in Connecticut as opposed to going back home and playing at Delaware. So, you know, again, I don't really know. I don't have anything against them, man. I think it's great for college basketball in the sense that we're seeing a team be very dominant. But it's bad for basketball visually because no one wants to watch a rout. No one wants to watch a blowout. No one's going to tune in. People are attending because they're supporters of the women's game, and they want the game to continue to grow, but you're not really attending because it's the game. You know, it's, oh, this is about to be a competitive game. Like, we don't know who could really win tonight. Like, oh, my goodness, if so-and-so is off and they're hitting shots, like, it could go down. Like, no one's thinking that. You're just saying, like we've all mentioned, man, how much? I mean, what's going to be the final score? Is it going to be 20, 25, or 30? We know UConn's probably going to win because they've just been that dominant. So, yeah, I want to see a change.
Right. And you know what? I'm not even going to look at it like, oh, I'm feeling bad for Syracuse because Syracuse don't got a shot. As soon as the ball goes up, you got a shot, man. Do something at the tip. Don't wait for UConn goes on that and I hate to sound rude in saying this. Don't wait till UConn goes on that 21-4 run. Because once you're in the storm of that 21-4 run, they
can't agree with that, Ty. Hold on. I can't agree with that. I can't agree with that. Here's why I can't agree with that. I mean, like, it's hard to beat talent when talent is working hard, okay? This UConn stays talented. And we know Gino keeps his teams working hard. They don't let up. They don't let down. Like, they know they're up 15 or 20, but they still go out and they execute, and they play until there are no more zeros, no more numbers on the clock. It's all zeros, the final horn and all that is sounded. And that's not wrong. That's right. That's how you play the game. They play the game the way it's supposed to be played. But they are 9 times out of 10 more talented 1 through 12. And that's the issue. And I'm not saying someone's cheating, someone's stocking their roster. No, that's not it. Everyone loves a winner. And the thing about with women's college basketball, these girls develop bonds, you know, early on, you know, doing AAU and through high school and summer ball and going to camps and things like that. And they like playing together. So that's just working in their favor. They take advantage of situations like that. But then you also look at they do a great job of recruiting. They have players from Florida, Illinois, Texas, Ontario, Canada, New York, Nevada, Connecticut, Arizona, Missouri, California, Virginia. I mean, it's almost somewhere different for every player on that team. That's all we can do. We keep like attributing accolades to this team. So do we want to all of a sudden come off and sound like we're hating on the program? No. But it's like almost asking, it's like saying uncle. Somebody has to step up and say uncle for the rest of women's college basketball, the other universities. Like, hey, y'all the standard. We get it. Y'all got it. But uncle one time, like, you know, tell one of the blue chippers, nah, go to Tennessee, go to Notre Dame, or you know, tell the blue chippers one time, go to Maryland, go to South Carolina, you know, go to Louisiana Tech. They used to do their thing, or go to Duke, go to North Carolina, like go somewhere else and give us a contest. How about that? Y'all get together and y'all play over there, and we'll see y'all in the national championship. Let's give the fans of women's college basketball a show. Let's give them a national championship game worth tuning into and watching. That's what's needed. That's what's needed right now. We need David to show up and slay Goliath. Period.
All right. And I know this is heavy stuff, and I'm gonna pass some of it, so I don't even like trying to do this. I feel like I'm disrespecting my baby. I love you, Pat. I love you, but do you compare Gino Auriemma in the women's game to a John Wooden or Adolph Rupp in the men's basketball game?
You talk about like in terms of wins?
Yes, like
or
bringing
impact
home
on the game.
Like winning and bringing home championships, how Adolph Rupp was bringing it to Kentucky and how John Wooden was bringing it back to Westwood with the Bruins. Looking at Gino already has 10. Listen, he already has 10. Could potentially win his 11th tonight. They have already won 4 in a row, right? 4, right? Their last season, they were undefeated. What, this will be the 4th one? Okay.
Yeah.
So even if this will be the 4th. However, though, if they're on a three championship winning streak, and it can be the 4th, or if they're on 4 going on 5, the numbers are still ridiculous. It's still ridiculous. I don't care what nobody tells me, right? Now, in the fact of him last year they went undefeated, they're potentially looking like they're going to be undefeated again in just 8 minutes. In 8 minutes, Connecticut takes like to go up against Syracuse, a team that they know from being a Big East team, even though Syracuse has moved to the ACC now, so it's somewhat different, but a known foe up against each other. I mean, looking at the championships that he's been able to amount and bring back to the state of Connecticut, I mean, could you compare him to the likes of the coaches in the men's game?
Well, I think in terms of all-time winning as coaches and having national titles, absolutely, he's in that conversation. But I, you know me. I mean, sometimes I like to do comparisons, and sometimes I just don't want to because I think, I mean, it's the women's game, and he's setting a standard. I mean, like he's out in front by miles, and he's the person that others will be eventually compared to. Like to me, that's who Gino is. So I wouldn't compare him to those guys. I mean, respectfully, you might say he's on par, but again, those gentlemen that you named coach in the men's game, he's coaching in the women's game. And again, when you understand the game, the women's game, you're dealing with so much. And Gino's probably not going to get the credit he really deserves for how great a coach he is. I don't watch him a lot. I'm not a big fan. But I know enough to know that he is a great coach because anytime you're coaching the female athlete, they're dealing with so much as a person, as young ladies, as young women, trying to figure out who they are and their identity and how they fit in life. What are they going to do? You know, is their life after basketball for them and how they're perceived, you know, in society and so forth and so on. And for him
to repeatedly get young women to come in, focus on their education, growing as people, developing their games, and look, let's just face it, with women's basketball, you're not one and done, so that's not an issue. So he never has to worry about, is he going to lose a blue chipper after one season? I think the earliest now, and I think they just amended the rule like maybe a few years ago, but you pretty much had to go to your senior year. Now I think you can declare as a junior. If anybody went after their freshman year, hold on, stuff is starting to come back to me. I want to say, who that just came? Floyd? Was she a freshman or a sophomore? She might have been the first underclassman to be able to declare and be drafted in the WNBA. But that was something that, you know, they weren't doing. So you're getting, again, like we were talking about with the men's game, having players stay around, grow, develop, and perform, it yields high dividends and payoffs. So, man, you know, he's in a class all by himself. Before Pat Summitt was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, she was the nemesis. That was the rival matchup. They were getting great talent there. They were rivaling, you know, UConn. So it was still like, well, we got somebody who's just not going to let UConn come down the block and just smack everybody around, you know what I'm saying? But unfortunately, you know, things have changed a little bit, and UConn is running the women's game.
Okay, we are at the tail end of this show. Got a lot out about the the national championship, which I figured had a lot of people call in and bounce out conversation. Got hot. It gets hot in the kitchen, man, especially at the cookout, man. This is what the grill is for, man. I try to let y'all do what y'all want to do, but hey, man, I understand. So, boys, it's just me and you on the closeout right here. I need a plug, closeout, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we shut it down here at the cookout.
Oh, man, Sports City Chefs, you know how we do it, man. I'm happy to be back inside the kitchen and enjoying you for the cookout. Had a great time, learned a lot tonight, and look forward to Thursday night coming back and doing it again for the Crossover Cafe Master Chef Edition. We'll have some NBA ball to discuss.
Yes, as everybody's coming to their last 6 and 5 games of the season, the talk right now is, do Golden State get to 72, 73? Who knows? They are on pace to get 70 tonight. Who sets up this schedule? They play Minnesota. Like, man, listen, Golden State's going to get it. They're going to at least get 72, at least. Okay, SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, interview the blogger chef. Be back here tomorrow, baseball buffing it up, talking about that diamond stuff, and be right back here Thursday with the guy that you heard here, me, R. Keezy, the rest of the guys at the Master Chef Edition with the Crossover Cafe. Excellent stuff. I am a Tennessee guy when it comes to women basketball. I live in the tri-state area, so it's New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. I live here, man. I live here. Even though I don't like to do this, but I live here, man. I live here. I'm sorry, girls. I'm sorry. I don't want to do it like that, but I had to, man. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again. I'm still stuck on this shot, people. Chris Jenkins, you got my mind blown. I'm blown. I'm a fan. I want to see where your career is at least 4 or 5 years from now, whichever league you're in. I don't even want to wish bad or anything on you, karma, so on and so forth. But I just wish you well, man. But I'm still out in Philadelphia with you. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Who would have thought I'd be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down, we gon' make this bitch light up. Even when the sun goes down, I'ma make it go.
Ow, host turning.
double entendre, don't even ask me how. Con Edison Florence connected to a high power. Y'all can miss me with the money talk. The smart money's on hold, fuck what the dummies talk. I don't do too much blogging. I just run the town, I don't do too much jogging. The summer's off, the winter too. Top down in the winter, that's what winners do. And to these niggas, I'm like Windows 7. You let them tell it, they swear that they invented you. And since no good deed go unpunished, I'm not as cool with niggas as I once was. I once was cool as the funds was. But these bright lights turned me to a monster. Sorry, mama, I promise you wouldn't change me, but I would've went insane had I remained the same me. Fuck me, this is true. All I got is this money.
Who would have thought I'd be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up.